a.m. Eastern Time. If you'd like to listen to Idle No More Indigenous Report live, you can listen 24/7 on the archive at prn.fm. The Progressive Radio Network is moving forward, and we hope you are coming with us.
You are listening to PRN.FM, the Progressive Radio Network.
All the streetlights around me, in the wall-to-wall prison of my city, flickering dirty neon over alleys mean and dirty streets, while my neighborhood is torn down around me. Too many people on the zombie street.
Hello, everybody. Hello, all my good friends. Hello, all the people that I love, my family. Almost didn't make it to be with you this week. That's an interesting story. This is Michael C. Rupert, Tracker of Truth, with you here on the Lifeboat Hour on the 21st of July in the year 2013. These dates become more and more poignant as we progress deeper into this journey that the human race and our planet Mother Earth is taking. I'm really tender tonight. I am vulnerable. I have been on the verge of tears for 3 days now, and I'm embracing that, and I'm finding great strength in that. There is a story that will connect with that, about what that means to a warrior and what that means to someone walking a spiritual path. I was taken offline this week, and it was an interesting story, and we'll kind of weave that, how that story played throughout the course of the show tonight. It was Thursday, and I had just finished reading a story that made me want to throw things at the wall. It was a story on RT, which has since been confirmed in many places. But Secretary of State John Kerry had warned publicly, with extreme, I would call it, bellicosity, belligerence, Nicolas Maduro, president of Venezuela, that if any Venezuelan aircraft were used to transport Snowden, that all NATO airspace, that would include the U.S., Canada, all of Europe, and certainly under the treaty which put Mexico into NORTHCOM, probably Mexico as well, they would even force down the presidential plane anywhere at any time to capture Edward Snowden. And there was not the slightest hint of diplomatic nuance anywhere in that statement. It was out and out bullyhood, which, following, as has been so frequently discussed, the forcing down of the plane of Presidente Evo Morales of Bolivia in Austria some weeks ago, was the consummate red flag in front of all of Latin America, daring Latin America to stand forth. And there are, you know, the United States clearly has established a position where it believes it no longer has to even appear as Mr. Nice Guy anywhere in the world, which means that we have entered the age of darkness, whatever you conceived of as the New World Order, the age of ruthless, blatant oppression, as blind as you may have been until now if you haven't seen it. This is officially the kickoff for that. This week also, and probably one of the most breathtaking moments of my life, former President Jimmy Carter, from whom I have a signed letter, I dedicated my second book, Confronting Collapse, to him, and he wrote me a nice letter back. Jimmy Carter made a public statement, which is confirmed. It was to Der Spiegel, reported on RT, but now confirmed in the Huffington Post, that he supports Edward Snowden. And that there is no functioning democracy left in the United States of America. And as all of this unfolded, I just had, because of the 35 years that I've been at this and all of the messages that I've been carrying for so long, saying that unless we took some decisive action, unless the human race or the American people, unless we did something to stop it, this was where we would wind up. And now we are officially there. Jimmy Carter's statement was and remains absolutely breathtaking. I hope that when they come for me or they come for him, they come for me at the same time. Perhaps we can meet somewhere in a camp or before we're executed and just have a conversation and I can shake his hand. To think that a former president of the U.S. would say that completely illuminates the fact that the United States has apparently become, it did after 9/11, it is when the Rubicon was crossed, has become the exact opposite of its stated public relations position, its stated raison d'etre, its value system, and everything else. If there is a great Satan on the planet today, it is the United States government, not the United States people. And it is a government which rules by force, by software, by economic power, by information, by control, by arm twisting, and by intimidation. That being said, that out of the closet, when 2 minutes after I made a scathing comment about the John Kerry statement, our internet connection here out in rural, really rural, out in the boonies, Colorado, turned off. After a couple of hours of going through the usual scenarios of recycling modems and so forth, I picked up the phone, called the internet service provider, and we did the pings and we did all that stuff. And the guy said, you know, I cannot tell you what has happened. I have to pass this up to higher levels within the company, Fairpoint Communications. They turned out to be pretty good, I think. And as that was revealed, and as I had had enough, I said to the guy on the other end of the phone, I said, my name is Michael C. Rupert. You might want to write it down. I'm kind of famous, kind of well-known. And I'm a staunch critic of the Obama administration, the U.S. government, the national security state. I've made a movie. I've written two books. I'm known around the world. And if your company is in league with the National Security Agency and I have been shut down, I intend to let all of my people know about it. This is a matter of constitutional liberty and freedom. And you know, the guy on the other end of the phone, he just sat there in silence. Now, what we would have expected before that, oh, yeah, sure, okay, yeah, we'll pass this up, right, okay. No, there was silence. And there were a couple of more calls. We went through Thursday and into Friday, and I was not able to get online. I want to thank Ali Maverick Thomas, my dear friend on Facebook, and everybody who stepped up on Facebook. The messages, the notices were put up. And all the reaction there was, oh, my God, I hope you're okay. Nobody anywhere said it's just a technical problem. Now, let's leave it there because we will pick up with that story later on, because that was one of the first things I noticed, that that suddenly in the wake of Edward Snowden and all of these things that are breaking, nobody poo-pooed anything anymore. There was just silence, in some cases guilty silence, in some cases sad, resigned silence. But nobody questioned the idea, the thought, well, you know, it was basically, well, of course you've been taken offline. We still don't know about that yet. So that was the place that I was living in if you will, melancholy resignation that all of the things that I had warned of, not all of them, but certainly most of them and some of the big ones, had now become starkly apparent and obvious for anyone and their uncle to see. And if they didn't see it, you know, now everybody's getting it. You don't even waste time talking to those people anymore. But everything had changed. Now, also during the course of the week, there were many, many other stories and events which drove home the dire nature of the situation confronting all of us and this planet. I think the story that most alarmed me this week, which is something that there has been a complete media blackout on for since probably the 18th or 19th, which is 3 or 4 days. But there was a press release, which was a small story. It came out of TEPCO, somebody reporting out of TEPCO, following up on stories that had appeared on the New York Times blog and a couple of other places, that there was that reactor 3 at Fukushima was venting radioactive steam directly into the atmosphere. At the very bottom of this short press release, it said that TEPCO was concerned about an out-of-control nuclear chain reaction, which was venting directly into the atmosphere. Now, for those of you who have followed the work that we did at CollapseNet right after Fukushima and all of the stuff that we've talked about here, all the great science, all the great comments and reportage and analysis from Arne Gunderson at Fair Winds, who was talking about the spent fuel pool at Reactor 4. And he said that the spent fuel pool at Reactor 4, if the building toppled and those rods were exposed to open atmosphere, nobody could predict the outcome. And I do believe Arne used the word cataclysmic. But what it appears now is that we do have an out-of-control nuclear reaction inside the already melted-down reactor at Unit 3 at Fukushima, which is venting into the atmosphere. You know, it's through, you know, obviously highly pressurized in small events. But there's a couple of differences that make the Reactor 3 situation extremely, potentially cataclysmic. One of which is that the reactor is full of MOX fuel, M-O-X fuel, which is a mixture of uranium oxide and plutonium, which is 10 to 20 or many, many multiples of times more dangerous than the fuel in the other reactors at Fukushima. And also, there is a spent fuel pool above the reactor at Unit 3. No one knows, and I'm hoping Arne Gunderson steps up soon. We'll have it on my Facebook page, and I'm sure it'll be all over the net if Arne makes comment about Reactor 3. But that is a cataclysmic event, and more evidence has been showing that the ground under Reactor 4 is softening, the building is tipping, and there are no technological means to even approach the reactors or to measure the amounts of radiation that are being released. And there's been a complete blackout on that story now for 3 days. If all 7 billion of us could ask one question at the same time of TEPCO or any media organization out there, I think the most important question that all 7 billion of us could ask is, what the hell is happening at Reactor 3? I was also deeply saddened this week when photographs were posted on my Facebook page. I believe it was Paul Beckwith, a very competent climate scientist. But there are fixed cameras at the North Pole, which are now floating and which are panning across open water at the North Pole. More devastating information from NASA this week that the rate of ice melt is accelerating and it is rapidly out of control. Just a little while ago on Facebook, Robin Westenra, who has just become such an invaluable part of this family, contributing so much on Facebook, was also with us at CollapseNet, posted a comment from Paul Beckwith that there are cyclones forming. There's a cyclone forming, which will go over the North Pole in about 6 days. Which Paul Beckwith will call the Great Arctic Ice Flush, which will apparently just scatter, melt, and disperse what remains of the ice cap, how little of it remains. But these Earth changes now are just totally dramatic. We have methane columns being released from Siberia 100 kilometers across. All of these positive feedback loops are triggering, and there was a story that I saw earlier in the week, which revealed that Russia had dumped, let me scroll down here to this story, had dumped many nuclear reactors into the Arctic Sea, just dumped them there. 17 nuclear reactors, thank you. This is from Earth First News, which came out of Bologna.org, and Earth First News picked it up. Russia had dumped 17 nuclear reactors and tons of waste in the Arctic. So I asked the question, might that be another feedback loop? We don't know that they're leaking, but if they get hot, of course I can see the imminent short-term expedient logic behind that. Dump them in coldest water on planet. That will, you know, that's the best we can do. But are those also contributing to what's going on in the Arctic, which is clearly much more, there's a much more aggressive melt up there, and now we are in summer. The North Pole is tilting more toward the sun, and the now blue water will be absorbing all of the sun's radiation, and those feedback loops will get ever more aggressive. So those cameras are floating around the North Pole, and we're not sure what's going to happen next, but if you live in England, you're cooking. Roads are melting in England. Hundreds and hundreds of people are dying. It's one of the worst heat waves, but it's continuing. It's aggressive. It is more absolute confirmation that the jet streams are increasing in amplitude. In other words, the vertical and travel of the jet stream is increasing, pulling more Arctic stuff down, pulling more warm up. And it just depends on where you are, whether you're baking, freezing, or drowning at this point. But that instability is continuing. Roads are melting. People are dying in their homes, and people are drowning because they're going in to swim in ocean water. And they're not prepared to handle the currents. I mean, this is a planet where desperation is becoming the norm. And so I was absorbing, if you will, all of that during the course of the week when I read this story about John Kerry. And I'm just going to read you this story, which came from RT, and it's been confirmed. And U.S. Secretary of State John Kerry has reportedly promised his Venezuelan counterpart to close NATO airspace to the country's flights and stop crucial oil product deliveries if Caracas grants asylum to NSA leaker Edward Snowden. The most ill-informed Americans will think, well, how are you going to hurt Venezuela sends us oil? How are we going to hurt them? Well, this is the stuff that those of us who labored so long on the field of peak oil understand clearly. I'm going to explain that in a minute. You're going to go, aha. Last Friday night, the story continues, just hours after Venezuela agreed to provide political asylum to former NSA contractor Edward Snowden, Kerry personally called Venezuelan Foreign Minister Elias Jaua, a Spanish ABC media outlet cites a source familiar with the conversation as saying. Kerry reportedly threatened to ground any Venezuelan aircraft in America's or any NATO country's airspace if there is the slightest suspicion that Snowden is using the flight to get to Caracas. The media outlet source said that the U.S.'s top diplomat sent a clear signal that Venezuela's Air Force One is not immune, and President Nicolas Maduro could easily face the same fate as his Bolivian counterpart Evo Morales, whose plane was grounded for inspection in Austria earlier this month in violation of all international diplomatic agreements. All. He reportedly also said that Washington is well aware of Venezuela's dependence on the U.S. when it comes to refined oil products. That's pay attention to that. He reportedly also said that Washington is well aware of Venezuela's dependence on the U.S. when it comes to refined oil products. They have the oil. They don't have the refineries. Despite being one of the world's largest oil producers, Venezuela requires more petrol and oil products than it can produce, buying around 500,000 barrels of gasoline every month, roughly over another 500,000 barrels of fuel for power plants, and some 350,000 barrels of MTBE, the additive used to increase octane in gasoline. On July 19th, President Maduro sharply criticized a statement by the Obama administration's nominee for UN envoy, Samantha Powers, who accused countries like Cuba, Iran, Venezuela, Russia and Russia being guilty of, quote, a crackdown on civil society. Maduro called on Washington to retract the despicable statement. I want an immediate correction by the U.S. government, Maduro said live on state television as quoted by Reuters. Power says she'll fight repression in Venezuela. What repression? There is repression in the United States where they kill African Americans with impunity and where they hunt the youngster Edward Snowden just for telling the truth. Maduro fumed. So I've been hoping, and I've been wrote about it for years at FTW, wrote about it in Crossing the Rubicon, you're probably tired of hearing it from me, that at some point there would be enough of a revolt in the world to rein in the United States government, but apparently the United States government has declared itself ready for that fight. So it's time for a song. And I thought we would dip back in this new and strange and unfriendly and hostile world that suddenly we find ourselves surrounded in to New White Trash's first album, Double Wide, which is now more than 3 years old. Unbelievable. I'm pulling up an oldie of one of my old songs. Wow. But it seems kind of appropriate tonight. You can find this song and all the songs from both of our albums on the website newwhitetrash.com. This is a song called Weird Kind of Sense, because that's exactly what it makes.
Oh, what a mess we left you. Oh, what a mess we left you. Against the odds and other gods, we left you such a mess. Posting on tea and champagne. Nothing left but a dried stain. Camped by the fire and full moon of time. Under the change of a changing. This is not tomorrow. Today is not a drill. No frightened anything. No reason rhyme. See the stream becoming. There is no fun. Pouring more into. No frightened. Tearing down the only house that God in. This is not tomorrow. Makes a weird kind of sense. Today is not a thrill. Makes a weird kind of sense. Yesterday needs no warning. And the prophecies fulfilled. What a mess we left here. Makes a weird kind of sense. What a mess we left here. See the stream become. What a mess we left here. More and more. Tearing down the only idols that God in heaven sent. And what a mess we left here. It's a weird kind of sin. And what a mess we left here. It's a weird kind of sin. And what a mess we left here. It's a weird kind of sin. And what a mess we left here. It's a weird kind of sin. And what a mess we left here. It's a weird kind of sin. What a mess we left here. It's a weird kind of sin. 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 What a mess we left here. What a mess we left here.
Does make a weird kind of sense, and it is kind of playing out that way. Now, in the midst of all this, as we're coming up on break here, I spent a couple of days, you know, trying to find out why I was offline. I'm totally frustrated because nothing is more important to me than being with you guys every week, especially when I have something to say. This is my great connection because the energy flows both ways here. It's spiritual. I don't know how it works, but it works. And I miss you guys, and communicating with you guys is important. On a programming note, however, next week, Carolyn Baker will be sitting in for me. I am taking the night off. I need to get my shit together. I need to. There are times when you just have to sit back and collect, and if you are feeling pain or grief or sadness, you need to sit with it, and I'm going to do an all-night peyote medicine ceremony at a Lakota lodge here where I frequently go for sweats and to pray. It's going to take me Sunday to absorb the stuff that is revealed from Spirit, because Spirit is very much on the field right now. We've talked about heroism and courage, and there's a lot of that showing up. Jimmy Carter, former CIA officer, writing a major editorial saying that Edward Snowden was right, the government's criminal, and major defense contractor, not a high-ranking guy, but a soldier, a warrior, going public, quitting, turning in, resigning from the old system. Those kinds of heroism are coming up. When we come back after break, we're going to talk about a friend of mine, a young woman named Lindsay, who I call my sister here, who has just gone up yesterday on the hill, we call it. You go up on the hill and you cry for a vision. She's begun a four-day vision quest, and there's some beautiful stuff that weaves with that into everything else that is happening here. We're going to come back with that and take your calls right after the break here, 1-888-874-4888. This is Michael C. Rupert, Tracker of Truth. You're here at the Lifeboat Hour on the Progressive Radio Network. We will be right back. Lifeboat Hour, Michael Rupert, Tracker Truth, with you in the second half of our show on the 21st of July, 2013. There is a remarkable convergence of events. I'm sure almost all of you have seen the documentary Collapse, and there was a dramatic point in the movie where I drew two intersecting lines on a graph, and one line collided with another. And that happens at the same moment that the total brute totalitarian fascist power of the infinite growth paradigm steps out into full naked view, totally unashamed to be seen for what it is. Earlier in the week, just a couple days before I got knocked off the internet, and that story will continue, I posted this on the Facebook. I said, getting on the same page today. I said, I've been pleased to see fewer and fewer financial stories showing up here. What is happening all over the world today at this moment is that it is becoming crystal clear that the financial and money issues are absolutely irrelevant. Ben Bernanke is not the most powerful man in the world. He is, in fact, the most irrelevant man in the world. Talking about interest rates, loans, the IMF, the World Bank, and even gold now has absolutely nothing to do with the fact that no amount of printed money can produce food for Egypt, China, the U.S., Britain, Canada, anyplace else. It cannot produce energy. It cannot produce clean air. It cannot produce fresh water. And most certainly, it cannot produce peace. It can't buy peace. Money is not power, and if we are to be productive here, we must liberate ourselves from even thinking about it. In the new human consciousness, money will be totally irrelevant to the concept of what I call successful living. The point of collision where actual laws, the real laws of the universe, the real laws of spirit, the real laws of particle physics, the real laws that govern all of creation, which have nothing to do with division, dominion, separation, where actual laws destroy the laws we have been programmed to believe in here and now. The world is turning upside down and inside out as we speak because of this. So please, let's cut down even further the number of stories put up about financial matters. World events are not being driven by money now. They are being driven by unalterable resource shortages and climate collapse, which is exponentially multiplying the resource shortages, which is leading to increased separation, division, fear, and conflict. Our immediate requisite for survival is no longer to change the way money works. but to eliminate it from our consciousness and our experience forever. And that is so important to understand, because if all of a sudden there was no money, there were no banks, there was no IMF, there were no credit lines, there were no ATMs, all 7 billion of us would suddenly find ourselves with this planet, the resources that remain, the conditions that exist here, and each other. And I'll bet you we would start to find some good, positive solutions very quickly. Just get rid of money. And for how many years I've said, until you change the way money works, you change nothing. Now, the only way to change the way money works now is just to eliminate it completely. We don't need it. It's killing us. We worship it. It has been our God. So, as I'm running around frustrated trying to get my internet service back up, you know, we start calling around. We find out that somebody close to us who also has Fairpoint is down. Okay, well, maybe if NSA was taking me down, they had to flip a node, which took a couple people down. We don't know. And then I find out that there's a crew of Fairpoint employees. That there's only one restaurant in Crestone, Colorado, which is the closest restaurant. It's 24 miles away. The closest store is 24 miles away from where I live. And they've been hanging out in the bar and drinking a lot and doing stuff. And I thought, well, maybe these guys are out screwing around and they screwed something up. I don't know. I got to go check it out. Now, in the meantime, I'm having the regular calls to Fairpoint saying, when am I going to be back online? And again, I didn't get any negativity at all, no snickering, when I told them who I was and what the issue was. There was quiet acknowledgement. So on Friday night, I had some things to do, and I had found out about the Fairpoint guys. But I was committed to go. My young friend Lindsay, who's a young woman in her 20s, had committed to go up on the hill to cry for a vision. It's a vision quest in Sisu Lakota tradition, Lakota Dakota tradition. Hanbletchia is what it's called, where one spends 4 days in a circle, about 30, 35, 40 feet across. And you don't leave it for 4 days, and you are naked. You have a blanket, you have a star quilt, you have an altar that's set up. It takes weeks and months of preparation before one goes up on the hill. One does not do this lightly. And there are a number of inipis, or sweat lodges, which occur, four to be exact, before the one crying for a vision is taken up on the hill. A very powerful experience, and it meshes perfectly with what I have observed at Sundance, is that these traditions to Lakota Sioux style, Lakota, Dakota, Nakota, there is no other spiritual tradition in the world which has the three sacred sacraments of the vision quest, the Uipi, which is an all-night medicine ceremony in which spirits are invited for purposes of healing, and the sweat lodge. And there is a distinct technology, because at Sundance I saw men 10, 15 years older than me in terrible shape, look at from a physical standpoint, dance for 4 days and four nights without water. They would, of course, go in and sleep at night. There were rounds which lasted an hour and a half, 2 hours each. But 4 days, their stamina was amazing. And what I saw was spirit actually energizing the flesh. And that happens in the vision quest as well. Lindsay invited me to attend the third inipi before she went up, which was the purification of the body to give support. And this sweat lodge was run by a Dakota medicine man who is a former Navy SEAL. He has four bullet holes across the top of his chest, across the shoulder, serious warrior. And this was absolutely the hottest sweat lodge I have ever experienced in my life. They brought in 28 stones at the beginning, and your skin is burning, and you sing and you pray in there. And the symbolism of the sweat lodge is that you are in the womb of Mother Earth, and you are being reborn, and it is a purification. And there was talking in there, and the man who ran the lodge talked about being a warrior, and the reason why the rest of us attended was to lend our spiritual strength to pray for and show support for Lindsay, who was going up on the hill. And he spoke very clearly, the way all warriors I have ever heard speak, the real warrior. And he said, you know, a warrior is, you get scared, and you know you're not enough, and you and you cry, and crying is one of the most powerful weapons a warrior has, a true warrior. And he spoke most eloquently by way of doing so to show his experience, to give strength to this young woman who was going up to cry for her vision. And I was called on to speak, and I said, I have always been a warrior. I'm a warrior and a scout. That's what I do. And I've spent most of my life telling myself that I was a coward, that I was too weak, that I couldn't do this, that I was too little, that I wasn't going to make it. I spent most of my life confronting faults in myself, large and small, trying to the best I could to do the job. But ultimately, what a warrior is someone who puts his body in between the things that he loves, the things that he or she holds sacred, and the enemy. And I guess in one case in the vision quest, the enemy is our imprisonment in this material consciousness, the one which Crazy Horse so much did not prefer. He much preferred to live in the spirit world, to liberate ourselves from this consciousness. And if you've been paying attention for as long as I've been doing this show, that's what it's all about. And I shared about that, and I could feel enormous strength and love. And that's the point of all of this. For Lindsay, and she came over, and she was very tearful, and she thanked us both. And she was going up on the hill the following day, which was yesterday, Saturday, after her fourth sweat lodge. She had prepared, she had done the work, and I was hoping to go up, to walk her up on the hill, which is an honor. After the fourth lodge, when the one crying for a vision is taken up on the hill, it is now considered that she is now he or she is now in the world of spirit. So no one looks at the person. You just walk with them in silence up to the hill. And I was looking forward to doing that, but I was faced with this internet problem. And so yesterday I was went into to Bliss and Crestone to see if I could find these Fairpoint guys. To just talk to them, say, hey, man, you know, did you guys do anything? You know, what the heck? You know, what's going on? Still not knowing whether NSA had taken me offline or not. And I missed taking her up on the hill. But as a result of this INIPI, this super hot sweat lodge, almost all day yesterday, I was filled with this unbelievable love for everything. I still feel even now deeply connected to my sister up on the hill. I have prayed for her many times, and I know that she is in good hands and that Spirit is taking care of her and giving her that magical strength that comes as she is crying for her vision, as a metaphor for perhaps all 7 billion of us starting to cry for ours as well. You all remember the story, what you want the truth badly enough when you want it as when you need it as badly as that breath of air. You remember that story. I've told it here many times. And I have been moved to tears many times, feeling this incredibly tender, vulnerable place. And I recognize that as a warrior, as a place of enormous power and strength. So if you are feeling vulnerable and tearful and scared and all of that tonight, embrace it and cast it out to the universe, because these are the keys which open the doors to the miracles that I have been talking about for so long. And I just have such a clear feeling that my friend Lindsay, now crying for a vision, is so emblematic, metaphoric, symbolic of all of us right now, and also of what's happening to Mother Earth. And I live in that love for her and for you. And so as I look in the news this week, as some incredible photographs of mutated fruits and vegetables were coming out of Fukushima, like a 1950s or 60s horror movie, as a 6.9 earthquake really rattles New Zealand, and Mother Earth is very much on the move with Popocatépetl erupting and major volcanic eruptions, and as the climate change, and as several nuclear plants have been shut down again due to typhoons in the South Pacific, and as I read stories, a woman in Texas went into the welfare office, and she's been denied food stamps. We know that food stamps have been taken out of the farm bill, and they're being slowly eliminated. And she shot her children and herself inside the welfare office in Texas this week, as I read those stories. As I read stories that the Department of Homeland Security is threatening to punish its staff for reading Washington Post articles about the NSA. As I read stories about the heat wave that has melted roads in Britain, causing wildfires, killing more than 760 people, not going away. I fall deeper into this tenderness and to this love and to this compassion. And we can all meet each other there without shame now. Because there are things happening. There are positive things happening. There are a few bright spots. Oh, there's one major oh shit story that came out this week. It was revealed that an Israeli submarine used Turkish facilities to launch strikes to destroy Russian missiles, Russian-made missiles, inside Syria. So we have an Islamic country under Erdogan who is just hanging on in Turkey, where the Turkish people are standing strong, and in Brazil, where the Brazilian people are standing strong, and people are rising up all over to this. We have a leader of a Muslim country allowing Israel to attack another Muslim country. Erdogan's in deep stuff. And I do believe that there is a connection between all of that, as I have made, between the bookend events, which have absolutely removed any intervention in Syria, any attempt at regime change or a no-fly zone. In Egypt, Saudi Arabia broke with the United States in a major way over Egypt by refusing to support the Muslim Brotherhood. In other words, the truth is being revealed, and this is a time for that now. So this is an amazing time of magic, and it's an amazing time of emotion. And here I have to come back to a song which I've played a few times for you. I have to love this song. It's from New White Trash's new album, Age of Authority, and I'm playing it because it's appropriate, and also because I'm going to take a week off, and I'm going to go be tender, and I'm going to go be vulnerable, and I'm going to go ask for my own vision. I'm going to go ask for guidance that I can bring back to the people, you guys, for whom I am Scout, and I am your Scout. And this is part of the bittersweet part of all of this, that there are changes taking place. There are energies. There is an awakening occurring, and we don't know if it's in time, but we hunger for it. Now that we live in what is so openly the age of authority, here is a song from our newest CD called Age of Authority from New White Trash, and the song is called Inner Reach.
The streetlights around me, in the wall-to-wall prison of my city, flickering dirty neon over alleys mean and dirty streets, while my neighborhood is torn down around me, too many people on the zombie street. And the sirens make an eerie sound around me. Makes me cold, makes me hot, makes me freeze. It's getting hard in the inner reach. Ever strange beneath the streets. All around where all the light waves meet. Secret. Kids with toys haunt the hallways, stuffing secrets up my sleeve. And the only country club around here is the cold cement under my feet. Most days I feel like a drowning man in a sea of drunken thieves. While this world goes on in a whirl around me, people look before they speak. And it's getting hard in the inner reach, ever strange beneath the street. All around where all the light waves meet,
where all the light waves meet and dance in secret, turn into the age of authority, day and turn into the age of authority, day and turn into the age of authority.
When the explanations don't explain and the conclusions don't conclude, when answers don't answer and questions don't matter and everything has gone so rude, well, the stars incline but don't insist, everything is done in a dancing twist. Round where all the light waves meet and dance, and it's getting hard in the inner reach, ever strange beneath the streets, all around.
That was Inner Reach from Age of Authority, New White Trash's new CD. You can find that album, which is really getting some attention, at newwhitetrash.com. You can listen to all of them for free. You can download for $11.11 all 16 songs. For $22.22, we're almost there where we can make some CDs. Physical ones, $22.22, you will get a physical CD, and $55.55 will get you a sponsor edition for what we hope optimistically will be our third project, which seems to be starting right about now. NewWhiteTrash.com. Check it out. There's some amazing songs there. And clearly, Spirit had a lot to do with the writing of these songs, and I'm grateful to my muse. So how did it all turn out with me getting back online again? Well, I went and hung out at the Bliss Cafe, and I'm telling the story there. Nobody at the Bliss Cafe said anything. Yeah, of course, NSA probably took you down. I mean, total acceptance of that now. So we have crossed some kind of a threshold there. But I came home after having dinner in town and without much luck finding the Fairpoint guys. Excuse me. And we were online again. And I asked my housemate, Doug Lewis, my bandmate, Doug Lewis, from New White Trash, what happened. And he said one of the major supervisors for Fairpoint had come by personally to our house and told us that it was a lightning strike. It's been repaired. But he wanted us to know. And he made a personal house call on a Saturday with respect and honor, saying, "You're back online, Mr. Rupert." I wasn't there. I missed the visit. But there's a point there. I always knew that I would get respect, probably at the last minute when it was too late to enjoy it. But there are signs. There are good signs. And speaking of the good signs that are out now, this just appeared in my inbox. A story that was actually published on the 18th by The Telegraph in Great Britain. Major GM food company Monsanto, quote, pulls out of Europe. Monsanto, one of the world's biggest and best-known genetically modified crops companies, is effectively pulling out of Europe. The Daily Telegraph can disclose. By Christopher Hope, senior political correspondent. That just went up on my Facebook page. So, one of the most important things that was ever said to me when I was in when I spent my 21 years in 12-step, which is really the best it's the best spiritual training in the world to live by those 12 steps, and I still do. An old timer said to me then, miracles can happen without your permission. And there is some kind of alchemistic magic that happens between an open heart that is willing, vulnerable, teachable, and surrendered. And these spiritual forces, which I have tried in so many ways to share with you, are out there and available to all of us. There is something that is and does and can happen when the open, willing heart surrendered in love and compassion meets challenges and circumstances. It transforms us and it changes us. That was just a really cool thing to see in my mailbox. Miracles can happen without our permission. And so, as I sign off tonight, I'll be back with you in 2 weeks. You will be in the good, loving, warm hands of Carolyn Baker next week, and I know she's going to have some good stuff. She always has good numbers, a good following. I thank her for taking over for me. And what I will be doing now is getting quiet. I won't have the pressure of I spend the whole week putting a show together. I can just take the stuff in, but then I can get ready for this medicine ceremony and All Night Lodge, and I will be going into that asking spirit to share with me love and compassion and any messages, anything that I need to know to come back to bring to you guys, because we are all one. And in case you don't know it, I just love you guys to pieces. You have been so loyal, and I will be back next week. Also, there's other fun things happening, but we're on the field. Stay in this place. Don't find or force answers. Just be open. Just be vulnerable. Just ask for mercy. And there is a universe waiting to respond, as my dear friend Lindsay, who's up on the hill now, finishing her first full day, crying for a vision, is doing right now. And I will be praying for her this week, and hopefully I will be there when she comes down from the hill, as we all will come down from the hill one day and share our visions together. This is Tracker of Truth, Michael C. Rupert on the Lifeboat Hour. I love you guys. I'll see you in 2 weeks. Good night.
Network is now on iTunes. Search for us to listen and download past shows.